People usually confuse volatility and store of value as something that is mutually exclusive. So people believe that, okay, something that needs to be a good store of value just cannot be volatile. That's a big misconception.
This is the Bitcoin Infinity Podcast,
a show where we take you through the Bitcoin rabbit hole and beyond.
Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Infinity Podcast. My name is Ram.
And I'm Krishna. In this episode, we'd like to talk about some of the common misconceptions behind Bitcoin's adoption as a global monetary network. So why don't we start with the first one, volatility?
Yeah, this is something I want to address first. There's so much misinformation floating around. Like, for example, the mayor of Miami announced like people can start earning their portion of their salaries in Bitcoin, and people started tweeting saying, hey, this is too volatile. People who are taking this as their salary will start seeing their value go down. And even like Planet Money came up with a video recently, which literally said like, there's this guy who comes to a store, he wants to buy like a can of Coke with Bitcoin. And by the time he purchases, the Bitcoin's price has changed and the person is literally not able to decide how much Bitcoin to give to the shopkeeper. So that's how Bitcoin is being portrayed, and hence, because of its volatility, it will never be a good form of money. So that's what we want to tackle. Where do you want to start?
Firstly, let's clarify one thing. Right now, Bitcoin is not used as a payment method because it's just in its very nascent stage. It's right now, its application is more as a store of value. And something that's used as a store of value, you cannot be looking at the price every week or, you know, even every month or even every year. Like, you know, it's a store of value. So you're going to not, you shouldn't be looking at the price. It's going to take a while. And since it's a store of value, so you have to look at it in long term. So as Bitcoin's adoption going to increase, the volatility will automatically decrease.
Exactly. So you'll have to keep in mind that volatility is actually an expression of size. Basically, smaller the cap or smaller the liquidity, the more volatile commodity or stock or even in this case, Bitcoin will be. So let's take an example like Amazon stock back in like 2003-2004. It was a small cap stock and we know it had like a monumental rise, but on its way to its rise right now, every year it had like, even though it had like a double digit year over year growth, it did face a lot of volatility because right now it's sitting at 2 trillion market cap. That's the market cap it's captured. But on its way, it had like double digit decrease every year in order to make a double digit increase the year after. So to compare with Bitcoin, Bitcoin right now is around 1 trillion market cap, but the market cap it's trying to capture is like the world's store of value, which is, if you include all like bonds, real estate, it's going to cross over to 200 trillion. So it's literally like 0.5% of its entire market cap that it needs to capture. So for whatever market cap it is at right now, it's extremely tiny compared to the 300 trillion size. So it is going to be extremely volatile on its way to capture that market cap. So volatility is not necessarily a positive or negative thing. It's basically perspective. It's positive or negative to the position you're in. So if you're holding a position and it's grown 1000%, the volatility is positive. It's worked in your favor. And on the contrary, if the volatility, because of volatility, you've lost 80%, it's negative. So again, it's perspective. And so far, like Bitcoin has grown like 200% year on year. Like you said, like the time horizon matters. Like I shouldn't be holding Bitcoin if I need to store my value that I need for my down payment for a house, which I'm going to spend in 6 months. No, definitely not. 6 months, it's going to be volatile for sure. So if you take over a 5-year, 10-year span, Bitcoin on an average, it's grown like 200% year over year. And you can also see how you price things in terms of Bitcoin. Like, we can put it this way. Bitcoin has grown 200% year over year the last 10 years. On the flip side, US dollar has lost its value like over 90-95% in terms of Bitcoin. Like even S&P 500 has gone down, which in US dollar terms has gone up like 8%, 10% year over year. It's gone down significantly, like over 80% in terms of Bitcoin. So you can look at it as if the world is repricing everything in terms of Bitcoin. So basically, Bitcoin is competing stocks in terms of store of value. It's beating stocks. It's beating gold. It's beating real estate. So it's eventually rising up the ranks in terms of store of value. And the world is essentially repricing everything in terms of Bitcoin.
So it's also fair to say that, you know, people usually confuse volatility and store of value as something that is mutually exclusive. So people believe that, okay, something that needs to be a good store of value just cannot be volatile. And that's a big misconception. On the contrary, you can also say that, you know, something that has a very good store of value cannot be volatile. I mean, look at the US dollar. It's not volatile at all, but if you look at it as a store of value, it's a terrible store of value. Yeah.
So an important question to ask right now is, how can an asset such as Bitcoin be both highly volatile and at the same time be an effective store of value?
So if you look at Bitcoin, right, I mean, it has an increasing demand over time, but its supply is limited and also it's very scheduled. You know, this difference between the demand and, you know, the increasing demand, but the very limited supply is actually the main reason for its price fluctuation. And if you think about it, as Bitcoin's value increases, that's what attracts new participants. I mean, there are new people coming in and they're looking at this price and they're going, oh, what is this thing?
The number go up technology.
Exactly, the number go up technology. I mean, everyone for that matter, including us, to be honest, yeah. We started paying attention to Bitcoin because its price was increasing. And that is the only way new entrants are coming into the market. You know, let's take an example, right? I mean, so between 2016 and 2019, the adoption of Bitcoin went from around 5 million people to close to 60 million people. That's almost like a 12-fold increase, but the supply increased only like 10% during that period. So it's very obvious, right? The demand has gone up 1300% or something, where when the supply has only gone up 10%. And imagine the people who are actually coming in for this demand. Like they are people with different information and different capital. Like they have different source of money. Some people want to invest a lot of money, some less. And also some of them come in because they believe it's a store of value, while the others think it's just speculative. I'm just going to buy some today, maybe just sell tomorrow, wherever it goes. So what we are trying to say is, with different capital, with different information, as more people come in and with a very fixed supply, but an ever-increasing demand, obviously expect the price of Bitcoin to be volatile and fluctuate around. So think about it like this, right? I mean, as Bitcoin's demand increases, as well as its price is going to increase, companies are going to start putting Bitcoin in their balance sheets. Then some of the goods are going to be repriced in Bitcoin. There is Lightning Network, which means, you know, people are going to start Bitcoin as a mode of payment and everything. So this is what the adoption curve is going to look like. And eventually there is going to come a point where Bitcoin is matured as an asset, which means, you know, its volatility is going to decrease to a point where you're not going to complain about it.
Correct. Yeah, you're saying like a point in time where a lot of people have held through the volatility and now they're pricing their goods in terms of Bitcoin. It comes back to the perspective like we spoke about. If I'm pricing a car that is worth one Bitcoin, it's going to be one Bitcoin over the next couple of months. So we are essentially tapering the volatility. And you might say, like, this is all assuming that Bitcoin doesn't fail, but we've seen that Bitcoin has survived the last 12 years. It has weathered so many attacks, including the biggest social attack on Bitcoin, which was the Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash hard fork. So each day Bitcoin doesn't fail, its survival becomes more and more likely. And this is basically the Lindy effect. Lindy effect is basically like, it applies to any idea or technology. Basically, if an idea that survives for 10 years, its expected future lifetime is also 10 years or more. What I'm trying to say is Bitcoin has proven to be anti-fragile so far. And speaking of fragility, the famous author Nassim Nicholas Taleb, he once said in his book, The Black Swan, basically complex systems that have artificially suppressed volatility tend to become extremely fragile, while at the same time exhibiting no visible risks. This is actually very true for fiat currencies. Basically, the central banks, they manage the currencies to mute the short-term volatility, but it creates instability volatility, that leads to long-term volatility. And Bitcoin, on the other hand, it's totally decentralized. There is no price mandate, and the lack of price stability mandate and the fixed supply will continue to result in near-term volatility, but it's going to drive long-term stability. So volatility in Bitcoin is actually a natural function of monetary adoption. And this volatility will ultimately like strengthen the resilience of the Bitcoin network and drive the long-term stability.
So to sum up on the topic of volatility, Bitcoin will become a transactional currency over time. But in the meantime, it would be a far more logical idea to sell your depreciating asset like a dollar or the rupee or the or gold or anything and save in an appreciating asset like Bitcoin. On Bitcoin's path to full monetization, the store of value must come as a logical first step. And Bitcoin has proven to be an incredibly good store of value, even despite its volatility. As adoption matures, volatility will naturally fall, and Bitcoin will increasingly become a medium of direct exchange.
All right, the next thing we want to address is intrinsic value. Basically, there's a common misconception saying that Bitcoin's intrinsic value is zero or Bitcoin has no intrinsic value. For example, gold has value because it has intrinsic value. So, yeah, we want to address this concern. Basically, I want to start off by saying intrinsic value is subjective. We value a certain thing based on its utility. For example, gold, which you think is valuable, if I go to an island where there's literally no one, there's just a couple of island natives and they have no idea what gold is, my gold, which used to be valuable, is literally of no use inside of that island. Like, it's of zero value, it's not going to help me survive, it's not going to help me trade. What I might need useful is like some food, maybe coconuts, maybe clean water to survive, maybe whatever is tradable in that island. So deriving value is purely subjective. And what we can best derive for an objective value, like our best approximation, is actually the free market price. And for money, any form of money, the free market price is basically decided by its monetary properties, which, if you recollect, is basically its property of divisibility, durability, portability, recognizability or fungibility, and finally, and most importantly, scarcity. And that's why, for example, in Western Africa, the glass beads were used as currency and it had value because, not because it had any intrinsic value, but it had very good monetary properties within that region. And obviously, some other form of money replaced it. Eventually, gold sort of demonetized all forms of money because it posed better monetary properties. And right now, Bitcoin is outcompeting its analog predecessors on the basis of its monetary properties. That's why we are seeing Bitcoin's price go up against gold or even the US dollar.
That's true. But even then, when we talk about Bitcoin's monetary properties, they are not absolute. Instead, you need to compare it with the monetary properties of the other systems in existence. And right now, that's a US dollar. So, for example, when you buy Bitcoin, right, in US dollar, what you're basically doing is you're selling the US dollar. It does not mean now that we have more Bitcoin and on less dollar at that point. It just means that the people prefer the monetary property of Bitcoin over that of the US dollar. So as the price of Bitcoin goes up in dollar terms, it just strengthens the fact that Bitcoin has a better monetary property compared to the dollar.
So basically, the monetary properties is the input, the price is actually the output. So that's how the value is objectively derived. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then the natural question becomes, which has more credible property? Like, I mean, of course, we said Bitcoin has a better monetary property, but it's fair to only compare it with that of the US dollar. So let's see what actually gives US dollar value, right? I mean, most people think that the US dollar has value because, most of us believe that it has value or it's just the, you know, the function of the government or the military or even the taxes. But all of that is just not true. The fundamental reason why dollar retains value is, again, going back to its first principle, is that the dollar maintains its value as a function of debt, or rather the relative scarcity of the dollar compared to the debt in dollar denominated terms. So what does all this even mean, right? Trying to put it in simple terms, in the dollar world, everything is a function of the credit system. So let's just explain the credit system.
What is that credit system?
Yeah. So let's say I make $100,000 a year, and that gives me...
Let's say they give you 10% credit worthiness, which is $10,000 worth of credit you can borrow.
Perfect. So that means even though I just make $100,000, I have the ability to spend $110,000. And you have to understand that my expenditure is someone else's income, right? Which means someone else is making $110,000.
Yeah, so your initial income is $100,000. You have $10,000 worth of credit that you can spend extra. So you're spending $110,000. So your spending is someone's income. Yeah.
Which means $10,000 was just created. And that's the
out
of thin air, and that's the credit. And if we actually take this example to another cycle, so the person who had that income of $110,000 is also going to have a 10% credit worthiness, which means he can have $11,000 as his credit, which he is going to spend, and someone else is going to make an income of $121,000. So that's how credit is created, or that's how, you know, dollar denominated debt is created. And that's just going to keep adding and adding and adding. So that's basically what the credit system means.
The credit system, it does not mean it's necessarily bad. Like, for example, if there's no credit system, like everyone is sufficient with whatever money they have, and they have to be productive with the money they have and then create more value. And productivity is what drives growth for an individual and for a country. That's how a country's GDP grows in the macro picture. But why credit is needed is, let's say I'm a farmer and I want to buy a tractor so that I can harvest more crops. So what I will do is I will take a loan, and which means I'm promising to pay that loan I've taken in the future, which means I need to be productive to repay my money in the future. So this actually works out. Like, if people are actually paying money or paying their loan back, their credit, the other side of credit is basically debt. So if people are basically paying off their debt, credit system actually works. But we all know that's not been the case as always. Like,
yeah, I mean, people are not being productive, right? I mean, the only way the credit system is going to work is you borrow money and you be productive. And that's the biggest problem. If you're just going to know, buy a TV and just sit at home and watch TV all day with your debt, that debt is never going to be paid off in the future.
Yeah. By the way, Ray Dalio has this amazing video on YouTube called How the Economic Machine Works. We highly recommend watching that. It covers debt. It covers debt cycle. We highly recommend watching that. So coming back to this, so let's put this in numbers. How much US dollar is in circulation versus how much debt is there in the US credit system?
So right now there are there's only $7 trillion in the banking system, and there is around $84 trillion of debt in the credit system. And this is how the Fed manages the relative stability of the dollar. The debt creates future demand for the dollars. So in the Fed system, each dollar is leveraged approximately 1:12 times in this case. So if you borrow dollars today, you need to acquire dollars in the future in order to actually repay the debt. So this relationship between the, you know, the size of the credit system relative to the amount of dollars gives the dollar relative scarcity and stability. So everyone needs dollar, you know, for that they have to work, they have to be productive in order to repay the dollar denominated credit. So this is similar, like, you know, if you want to put an analogy, it's like a case of a drug dealer. You know, you have an addict, you want to hook them to the drug, and they will keep coming back for it. So in this case, the drug itself is the debt, and it forces everyone to stay on the dollar system.
And it's like a vicious cycle. So the more debt you are in, and it creates more. So in order to settle my debt, one I can do through productivity I can work hard and settle my pay off my debt. Or if everyone is not productive, the government is not going to let everyone not pay off the debt. So they will actually print more, which is quantitative easing, and pay off the debt,
which indirectly creates
more debt.
So
yeah,
it's a never ending cycle. It'll just, and the end of this is the, literally there's no end, but as it keeps going, it's going to just create more and more and
the
more.
The gap is going to widen even more and more.
Exactly. Yeah.
So coming back to the relative monetary properties between US dollar and Bitcoin, dollar is only scarce related to the amount of dollar denominated debt that exists. So basically, dollar's scarcity is relative and Bitcoin scarcity is absolute. There will only be 21 million Bitcoins ever. There is no credit system involved in Bitcoin. Yeah, that's what makes Bitcoin more scarce than dollar. And that's what makes Bitcoin more valuable than the US dollar.
So in order to conclude, you know, the current legacy system involves the central bank needing to print US dollar in order to sustain the credit system. So each time, you know, there is an event of quantitative easing, you know, money printing to sustain this credit system, more and more people are going to discover that the monetary properties of Bitcoin are, you know, vastly superior to the, you know, the legacy system. And, you know, Bitcoin will become a more and more attractive option compared to dollar or euro or yen or whatever it is. And in the global competition for money, Bitcoin has inherent monetary properties that the fiat monetary system lacks. So ultimately, Bitcoin is backed by something, and it's the only thing that backs any money, and that's the credibility of its monetary properties.
Hey, if you've made it this far, thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to subscribe to the show. You can also send us your feedback to hello@bitcoininfinitypodcast.com. Or visit our website, bitcoininfinitypodcast.com. We're also on Twitter at Bitcoin8Podcast. That is BITCOIN number 8 podcast. As always, this show is meant for educational purposes only and is not financial advice.